Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter.
Hey, it looks like you like to get up early, so Monday through Friday, listen to me from 5:30 to 9, Mike Ferguson here, and you are listening to The Randy Tobler Show right here on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to the program as we roll along, third hour of the program this morning. Thanks for being with us this and every Saturday. We talk now with Will Scharf, candidate for Missouri Attorney General, on the heels of a couple of huge donations that have come in. Missouri Independent reporting some big donations coming into your campaign, Will. Thanks for being on with me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So look, I think we're in a time when, if you look at the national polling, certainly if you look at the crime statistics, I read one the other day that St. Louis area is among the leading cities in the nation for violent crimes. And I know that those stats can sometimes be, you know, engineered one way or another, depending on how the definitions flow. But certainly a big problem on the top of everyone's minds. What is the distinction between you and Attorney General Andrew Bailey that you would make in terms of this race and keeping the public safety prime directive number one?
Well, look, you know, I think on issues like crime, on education, on economic development, really just up and down the line, Missouri is a state that's been consistently disappointed by our political class in Jefferson City. I think the fact that our state's capital is totally in hock to this narrow set of special interests and lobbyists and political insiders is one of the main thing holding our states back. And when you look at the crime issue, the fact that we don't have tough bail laws, the fact that we don't have real truth in sentencing laws like other states do, the fact that we haven't actually addressed the issues that we have with under-policing in St. Louis and Kansas City. I mean, I place blame for that at the Jefferson City establishment. And if I'm elected attorney general, those are the sorts of issues that I want to focus on and hopefully lead other people to focus on. Eric Schmidt actually probably did more on this issue than any attorney general we've ever had. He had a program called the Safer Streets Program where he put prosecutors from his office into the U.S. attorney's offices in St. Louis and Kansas City. Together, they prosecuted hundreds of serious federal violent crime felonies, took hundreds of serious violent felons off the streets. Bailey ended that program. I'm not exactly sure why, but I'd like to bring it back. I think at the end of the day, if you punish violent crime, you get less of it. And that's just something our state's not doing effectively right now.
Well, you mentioned a couple of legislative initiatives that you'd like to see, but I mean, the attorney general doesn't have a vote, may have some influence in that. But are there other things that the attorney general can do with what basically bringing to the fore what Rudy Giuliani did in the 90s to bring New York City into another beacon of tourism and prosperity and safety for travelers and citizens? And we've now seen that deteriorate, but he brought in the broken windows policy. We don't see that pretty much anywhere in America these days. A lot of us look, and the reporting that we hear and that we participate in, Will, it seems like every criminal that eventually rapes or sodomizes a young girl or an older woman or kills someone has a rap sheet longer than Biden's gaffe sheet. What can the AG do in terms of restoring, you know, true accountability at lower levels of crime so it doesn't escalate?
Yeah, well, a couple things there, Randy. You know, first of all, I disagree with the idea that the attorney general shouldn't be a leader on legislative issues. I think one of the serious problems we have with our political culture in Jefferson City is a lack of leadership, that it's a whole bunch of legislators and senators running around. Each sort of has their own agenda. I don't think there's anybody. I don't think there are any strong conservatives who are really focused on cohesive policy solutions to take our state forward. And I think the attorney general's office, through the use of attorney general opinions, can actually serve a very big role in shaping the legislative agenda and in helping conservatives get good conservative legislation passed. To your point on Rudy Giuliani, you're absolutely right. I mean, the science on this issue has been settled since the 1980s with Operation Ceasefire in Boston, obviously with what Giuliani did in New York. that criminals respond, what they respond well to, what actually deters them, is a certainty of punishment. That if they know that they're going to be punished for whatever crime they're going to be committed, they're going to commit, typically they're deterred from committing that crime. What we have in Missouri is the opposite. Even for serious crimes like murders, assaults, shootings, et cetera, that certainty of punishment doesn't exist. Most of those crimes go unpunished, and that's why we keep seeing more and more crime. As I said, I'd like to restart Safer Streets. I'd like to start bringing more serious violent crime prosecution into the AG's office. It's also something, obviously, that through Missouri Office of Prosecution Services, we need to work with local prosecutors on as well. But again, what's key here is that certainty of punishment, that criminals in Missouri need to know that if they commit violent crime, they are going to be punished. And right now, that deterrent just doesn't exist.
We're talking with Will Scharf, candidate for Missouri's Attorney General. Will, you've taken some heat from the opponent's side and, you know, opponents of yours, that you're an outsider, that the money that supports you, including some of the recent money, is all outside money. You're not really a true Missourian. You know, I'd like to give you a chance to rebut that and you know, answer those critiques.
First of all, Andrew Bailey's largest contributions come from outside the state as well, so it's a garbage hit. Beyond that, you know, the only scandal, the only fundraising scandal in this race, in my view, is the fact that Andrew Bailey is supported. His largest supporters are liberal trial lawyers. He's taken a ton of money from the marijuana industry. He's had fundraisers hosted for him by people who are under investigation by his office. He had to recuse out of a case involving the illegal gambling industry because of money that he accepted. That's the sort of pay-for-play corruption we expect from Democrats. But I think Republicans should be up in arms about the for sale sign hanging on the outside of our attorney general's office. To me, that's the real scandal here.
What do you think about, you mentioned Eric Schmidt, and I think A.G. Bailey has continued this, which we see a lot I think, cooperation between various attorneys general around the nation, you know, pushing back. It started with the pushback against the vaccine mandate under Eric Schmidt. We've seen, you know, pushing back against the collusion between federal government and big tech in censoring conservative voices and, you know, basically infringing on America's First Amendment rights by proxy through big tech. What plans would you have to either extend or squelch that kind of cooperation on the national level to fight for our basic constitutional rights?
Yeah, I think Eric Schmidt was a real leader nationally. I think Bailey has primarily been a follower nationally. He's signed on to a lot of other people's lawsuits, but he hasn't originated much of his own. I think that's a shame. I think that office has lost real capacity since Eric Schmidt and his team left office. And I think that's a problem. I think when you look at Bailey's accomplishments, he's built an outstanding press operation and a legal operation that's consistently failed at some of its most basic tasks. I think that's a real problem that we're going to have to address in the years ahead. But absolutely, I mean, we've been heartened from the start of this campaign by the support that we've gotten from other Republican attorneys general around the country. I think we'll have some announcements to make on that sort of thing in the coming month or two. But I'm really looking forward to working with some of the outstanding Republican attorneys general that we have now in other states, people like Chris Kobach in Kansas or Brennan Byrd in Iowa, just to name our near neighbors. I mean, to me, that's going to be one of the fun parts of the job, is really bringing the pain on the organized left and standing up for constitutional principles.
Will, I've been disappointed. As you know, I do an morning show in Columbia. And I've talked with you before in my Columbia show. We need to get you on and have you bring your voice to that audience as well, more often here in Columbia. But recently there was a high-speed auto chase after a carjacking, ended up in the Jefferson City Airport, where a guy who had Mexican ID but could produce no Missouri or any other state ID, according to news reports, was apprehended. And I've asked legislators in this state to get ahead of the whole issue, that issue being that we're all border states now, and every community, St. Louis, Columbia, Kansas City, everywhere in Missouri is a border city now. And I haven't heard much on the legislative front to get ahead of this. What I hear is, we have to wait till it's really an issue and then we'll address it. What are your thoughts on that? Getting ahead of the whole, they're coming to a state or a city near you, those illegals who are criminally inclined?
Yeah, I think the idea that we should wait until illegal immigrant crime is a bigger problem before we tackle illegal immigrant crime. I mean, that's just that classic do nothing Jefferson City attitude that's been holding our state back. As I said, I want to be a leader on these issues. I want to work with the legislature on these issues. We need to pass much tougher laws along the lines of what they have in Texas or Arizona, criminalizing illegal presence in the state, illegal entry into the state. I think we also need much tougher laws restricting employers from hiring illegal immigrants, whether that's through E-Verify or another system. If we don't get ahead of this problem, if we become effectively a sanctuary state for illegal immigrants, given the millions and millions and millions of illegals flooding across our border, we're going to wake up one day and this is going to be not just a problem, but the problem in the state. And I think it's a real shame that Jefferson City never seems to get ahead of these sorts of issues. We've got to get it done. Otherwise, it's mission critical.
Yeah. And if I can just take a little detour from state politics and the race for AG. I know you've been involved and I've heard you speak very eloquently about the tragedy that happened on October 7th. You have obviously a lot of deep connections with the Jewish community there. You've talked about that, in public events. Israel's been taking some PR hits. It started, it started long before it, but it's really been escalated recently with the mistaken attack on the aid workers in the Gaza Strip. And then just the other day, some CNN videographer and journalists were apparently injured. One lost his leg in an attack that resulted in injuring those folks who they claim they were clearly identified as journalists. It seems as though the rhetorical and the PR tide is turning against Israel as they try to root out Hamas. What are your thoughts on that whole situation over there and where we are and where it needs to go?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, as you said, I have family in Israel. I've spent time in Israel. What they suffered on October 7th, I mean, think of it as 9/11 times 100, given the size of the state of Israel. In terms of these attacks, that aid convoy, and I haven't seen this journalist incident that you're talking about, but the problem is they're fighting an enemy that, in contravention of the rules of war, regularly disguises its fighters as aid workers or journalists or hides in hospitals and schools. This isn't the way that war is supposed to be fought. And Israel is dealing with a very, very difficult situation as a result. Hamas is the party at fault here, and I think that's worth remembering. When you start a war, you don't then get to dictate the terms of how that war is going to be fought. And that's what's so pernicious about this narrative that Israel should fight with one hand behind its back. I mean, the October 7th attacks drove home to many Israelis of younger generations that the state of Israel, which at the end of the day is, it's a tiny sliver of land. It's the size of the state of New Jersey. It faces existential threats of the sorts that I don't think we necessarily can relate to in a country as strong and as powerful as the United States. And those existential threats really came home on October 7th when Israelis saw their neighbors carried off into captivity, raped, murdered, et cetera, burned to death. Israel needs to finish this war. Israel needs to defeat Hamas. Ultimately, the way to alleviate civilian suffering, the way to end all of these issues that we're seeing is for Hamas to be defeated and destroyed, and hopefully for a new, brighter future for the Palestinian people to take hold. I don't think anyone relishes civilian deaths. I don't think anyone relishes these accidental strikes on aid convoys or anything like that. To me, the best, most humanitarian solution here is for Israel to finish the job, to get rid of these disgusting terrorists who have caused so much harm, both to Israelis and to Palestinians, and hopefully to get somebody better in the Gaza Strip who will actually, work to advance the interests of the Palestinian people and not just to advance the interest of killing Jews.
Yeah, it's just tragic that the pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli media, which is powerful and just hell-bent on defending the indefensible, continues to paint the Israelis as some reckless, warmongering group, when I think all objective analysis would say that among the various armies in the world, they have gone historically to great lengths to try to protect, civilians from being caught in the crossfire. But that narrative, unfortunately,
right,
is not getting.
And I'd make just one other point. There are Americans currently held hostage by Hamas. There were Americans who were taken on October 7th. I haven't heard Joe Biden speak about that fact once since October 7th. The idea that Americans have been carried off, probably raped, tortured, whatever, by a vicious terrorist group, and the fact that our administration, the White House, doesn't seem to have anything to say about that, should be outrageous to all Americans, whether you support Israel or not. I mean, there are Americans being held by a terrorist group, and our president has nothing to say about that. To me, that's just shameful.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Hey, Will, I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very, very much for having it with us this morning. And again, if folks want to stay in touch with your campaign, the website?
It's votesharp.com, and you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Truth Social, at Will Sharp. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, thanks. There he is, Will Sharp, candidate for AG in Missouri's Attorney General race. When we come back, if you're worried about election integrity, you'll want to stay tuned, because Becky Arps has something that may have flown underneath your radar to bring to us. If you're not aware of it, you really want to stay tuned, because you should be. There's an opportunity to defend election integrity. Becky Arps, that's Chris's much better half. Just joking, Chris. Joins us right after this break on The Randy Tolbert Show.
Criminals respond, what they respond well to, what actually deters them, is a certainty of punishment. That if they know that they're going to be punished for whatever crime they're going to commit, typically they're deterred from committing that crime. What we have in Missouri is the opposite.
I got my first real six string, bought it at the five and dime.
Randy Tolbert, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Welcome back to the program. I became aware of an initiative that's working its way through the legislature that I hope we'll see on the ballot in November, courtesy of Becky Arps. And she joins us now because, Becky, this is an important election integrity issue that I frankly wasn't aware of, and I thought I was keeping my eye on things, but I'm really glad you brought it to the fore. We talked about it on the daily show I do in Columbia. I want you to bring it to listeners' attention here. Maybe News Talk listeners are well aware of it, because there's a guy I think you know named Chris. Isn't that right? You know a guy named Chris?
I do know a guy named Chris. In fact, yeah. Dr. Tolbert, having me on.
Yeah. Hey, but let's talk about it. So there's an initiative that can make its way to the ballot. What is this constitutional amendment about, and how is it so important to election integrity in Missouri?
Well, there's two aspects to it. The aspect that, and frankly, both aspects are very important, but the one I'm most interested in is it's amending the Missouri Constitution so that instead of saying all citizens of the United States can vote, it says only citizens of the United States can vote in Missouri elections.
Now, let's go through that, because we had an interesting discussion about that. Well, what's the difference? I mean, all, only, potato, potato, let's call the whole thing off. I mean, come on. Why does it matter that it be changed to only rather than all?
Well, when we were kids, we were taught that words have meaning, and I think we forget that as an adult. So, for example, if you invite all of your friends to your birthday party, that doesn't mean your family or your enemies can't come. But if you invite only your friends to your birthday party, then you're probably going to have a better party. Voting's the same way.
Yeah, so it's basically a more restrictive definition, the universe becomes a little smaller of those people that can go to the ballot box. And I guess this speaks to various jurisdictions throughout the country, San Francisco, the blue areas that have allowed non-citizens to vote in their local elections. But I guess under the current constitution, it could, under a future democratic rule, it could allow anyone, immigrants who live in Missouri, illegals who aren't citizens, to vote in statewide elections? Or would this just protect local elections from non-citizens voting?
What we're seeing across the country is that municipalities are allowing, either through a vote or through their local councils, to allow non-citizens to vote. In Missouri, we have a unique situation in the fact that we have a level of home rule. So, for example, if the older people of St. Louis City decide that they want to allow non-citizens to vote, because they have their own election commission, they can do that. And there is right now nothing that can stop them through the Constitution.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about, we're getting close to ice cream social time. So I'm thinking, if I live in a neighborhood and the HOA says that all people that live in a white framed house, a white sided house in the neighborhood, can come to the ice cream social and get mint chocolate ice cream for free, that doesn't exclude people that live in brown sided houses from coming. But if the HOA...
Nor does it exclude me, who doesn't even live in your HOA.
That's what I mean. Yeah, so it doesn't exclude anyone. I mean, it just says, yeah, see, and I think that's really an important distinction. Okay, I think we've got that one wrapped up. It's Saturday morning, after all, and asking people to put on their thinking caps this early, we have to really unpack it very carefully, right, Becky? I mean, it's very important.
Well, okay. And even if it's not on Saturday mornings, because it's confusing even when you're in the thick of things.
It is. And words do matter, and precision in language of legislation and certainly constitutional amendments is so important. Okay, so what's the other aspect of this proposed constitutional amendment? And this is one not by initiative petition, but working its way through the legislature, right? Because there's two ways to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot in Missouri, correct?
Correct. So there's a House bill and a Senate bill. And what this bill does is not only amends the Constitution so that only citizens of the United States can vote, but it also amends the Constitution so that, and at least the Senate bill says, unless there's already existing ranked choice voting, then you can't implement ranked choice voting.
Now, you know, there's people that claim to be conservatives who are okay with ranked choice voting, because I don't know why. It doesn't seem to me like, I mean, we're the people that you know, you don't get a conservatives generally are against the notion that every snowflake who, you know, enters an equestrian competition or, you know, competes in a swim meet should get a ribbon, right? I mean, you know, you either win or you lose. But ranked choice voting sort of in some ways sounds sort of inclusive and sort of, you know, sort of nice. Well, you know, if your candidate doesn't win, they come in second, well, they may have a chance. I mean, I'm surprised. There are conservatives who are okay with ranked choice voting. I'm not sure I understand the rationale. What's the best argument for ranked choice voting that we should get a good argument against, Becky?
Frankly, I don't think that there's a good argument for it that we'd need a good argument against. It's confusing. It's not clear. There's questions about whether my vote counts. So if I rank, for example, if I rank all the radio hosts at News Talk STL in the order of my favorite and my husband doesn't win, does that mean that it was stolen from him? Does that mean it wasn't counted? So maybe I say, you know, Chris Arps is my favorite, Randy Toler is my second favorite, and Randy Toler wins. Yeah. Did my vote even count? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, to be your second favorite would make my day and year, actually, but that's another matter. But I would say, I think we have to say that because you have the utmost of integrity, you would recuse yourself from that vote. But that's another matter. No, but I see what you mean. I mean, I think it does, in a way, it does sort of disenfranchise a large swath of voters, right? Those who get those who vote for the candidate that gets the plurality, i.e., the winning number of votes, you know? So, yeah, I get it. I guess that's ranked choice voting is far different from, though, I think in Georgia and other, you know, other areas they have, you know, runoffs. But that's a different story. That's different than ranked choice, right?
Absolutely, because a runoff election would be if somebody didn't get the majority of the vote, then you only get to vote on the top two people. Mm-hmm. To a certain degree, you know, for example, like in our gubernatorial race, in the primary in August, we have a lot of candidates. So maybe one of the candidates doesn't get over 50%, then the Republicans would get to vote on the top two candidates in a runoff election. Now, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We say whoever wins the Republican primary is the candidate in the general election.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, it's simple, right? I mean, I think that I think one of the root pillars of conservatism is, you know, sort of keep it simple. Let people get into the complex weeds of interpersonal relationships and things that affect their lives. You know, let that be at the least common denominator that we can in terms of power, right? In terms of power dynamics. And I think that's right. It's just may the candidate that gets the most votes win. I mean, it sounds simple and makes a lot of sense. All right. So it's passed the House, and has it passed this? Did it pass the Senate this last week or not?
So it passed the Senate. It was Senator Ben Brown sponsored SJR 78, and that's passed the Senate and is going on to the House. And then there is a bill sponsored by Representative Ben Baker and co-sponsored by local representatives Justin Sparks and Adam Schnelting, HJR 104. And that hopefully this week it's been perfected, and the next step is third read. And so we're hoping that that will go through. Now, the Senate bill passed on party lines, which means that none of the Democrats actually voted to make sure that only United States citizens can vote in Missouri elections.
Yeah. Don't tell me there's not an agenda for letting all those illegals come in so they can vote. Those Democrats can't pull one over our eyes. No, well, they can't pull the wool over our heads. You know, it's interesting. They and this is absolutely unrelated, but it's the way my distractible mind works, Becky. Why do we ever use the word perfection when it comes to legislation? It makes me want to LOL meme it all over the place. Like, perfection? You got to be kidding me. Have you ever thought about that? Perfection.
Well, I think that's the last opportunity they have to amend it. And so that's why I think they
As we found out, there's a lot of legislation at all levels that ain't quite perfect. But I know. Well, thanks for your involvement and activism in this. This is really an important issue that, especially with the onslaught of the immigrants, what, 10, 11, who knows how many million strong now. It's not a matter of if, but as we talk with Will Scharf, it's a matter of when they come and want to have a voice in voting and will be endorsed and embraced by those on the other side who thinks they ought to have a vote, even though they're not citizens. So it's critical that folks are aware of this, and we'll look forward to more conversation as this moves through the House. Now, if it gets passed in the House, is there like, do they have to go through the whole conference thing, or are they pretty much identical bills?
There's a minor change, so they'll have to go through the conference thing. It's kind of frustrating because in the Senate, the Senator Baker acceded to what the Senator from St. Louis requested, which was if you've already have ranked choice voting, it doesn't you don't lose it. And then she voted against it, so that kind of irritates me. But it needs. There's a little bit of a difference, so they'll have to come to conference on that. But I don't expect that to be a problem, and I'm looking forward to it passing the House hopefully this week.
Good. And then it'll be on the ballot in November, right? Not August, but November.
Yeah.
Constitutional amendment. Okay.
And how many times does the legislature give you a chance to weigh in on this? And I think that's vital. Right. I mean, let the U.S. citizens of Missouri weigh in on whether they want to allow non-citizens to vote in their elections.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense, which is why it's going to have a hard time getting anywhere, because it seems like the only things that make it forward in these United States anymore are things that don't make sense. But you made a lot of sense. Thanks for being with us, Becky. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to onlycitizens.vote. And there's a page dedicated to Missouri so you can track what's happening on the bills and you can contact your legislator.
Onlycitizens.vote. I didn't know .vote was a domain. That's interesting.
Okay. Onlycitizens.vote. It is.
Okay, sounds great. Hey, Becky, thanks very much. Have a great rest of your weekend. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you, you too.
All righty, there she is, Becky Arps. Chris is much better half. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Sorry, we love you, Chris, but I'm sorry. No, I love Chris. You know that. All righty. And Chris is, you talk about a voice for reason and patriotic advocacy throughout Missouri and beyond. Chris does a great job as well. All right. So let's move forward because Jerome brought something that gave me a big smile. This morning. Brought a little clip that you want to hear when we come back. And let's open it up some phone calls. 314-912-1019. Let's talk about inflation. Let's talk about Iran and an imminent threat to Israel. Let's talk about the border. Let's talk about whatever you want to talk about. As we wrap it up here on the Randy Tolbert Show. Straight ahead.
If you invite all of your friends to your birthday party, that doesn't mean your family or your enemies can't come. But if you invite only your friends to your birthday party, then you're probably going to have a better party.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Good morning, everybody. Tony Colombo and Katie Fitzpatrick here.
Thanks for listening to the Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL. And don't forget to join us every weekday at 2 p.m. for Colombo and Katie.
Also, keep it here for my Saturday morning show, the Bluff City Outdoors Show, today at 11. Now back to Dr. Randy Tobler. Love you, Doc.
Love you too, guys. I love being on with Katie and Tony. And then on Thursday afternoons and, of course, on Tuesday mornings, I'm with Vic and Ken. And Tuesday afternoons with Chris and Tim, it's always a lot of fun getting the privilege of being on with the great, great air talent we have here on News Talk STL, and not only during the week, but during the weekend as well. And that's what's really exciting about listening to this station. And I love participating in it. It's a privilege to do that, but even more so to just listen. Man, I'm just glued to it all the time. Drives my wife crazy, Jerome. I've always got the ear pods in. The selective hearing gets worse when they're in. You know how that is. It's bad.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Hey, so you found a funny clip where basically parodying the absurd woke culture that we listened to, that we're in. Let's take a listen to that, huh?
Yeah. So like we were talking about last time with my job prospects, I think I found a way around that to really truly stick out to potential employers. And so the character in here is also a white male. And I wanted to share with you how he got around the issue of DEI and ASG.
Barry Brittle, okay, created VP Watermark Greeting Cards, a wholly owned subsidiary of Mega Gel Chemical Death Corp.
Name's Duckman, Duckman with a D, as in delighted to make your acquaintance. What say we get to know each other at my favorite watering hole, Melon's Mania. Tonight's grab two for the price of one night.
Not interested, I'm gay.
Well, in that case, we can have a few umbrella drinks at a fern bar.
Down, Duck. I don't practice homosexuality. I just use the gay label as an accessory. Studies indicate it makes me demographically attractive to my employers, putting me first in line for any affirmative action promotions. My first 10 years at the company, I was black.
So do you think that'll work for me?
I think so. You said you'd had, what, didn't you say last week that you would apply? Here you are, a young white male with an impressive resume, leadership in various organizations, right? At your at the high school and college level, I think you said, right?
Not so much high school. I had a rough time with that. But yeah, college, I graduated Dean's List Honors. I got, yeah. I have 7 awards that I won for various things I did for the community, for the school. And so yeah. I remember last week we were talking about that, and then this comes across my feed, and I just thought it was too good not to share.
It was great. But didn't you say you've had literally dozens of applications that, and you can't get a look. You can't even get an interview.
So since 2023, January of 2023, I've submitted right around 500 applications, and I've gotten maybe 3 interviews excluding this one. So not counting
500,
give or take. Yes. Yeah, that's according to Indeed. And that's according to a lot of the rejections I have in my email, like personally on the company's website. So Maybe I'm doing Holy something God. Wrong with my resume or my portfolio, but now I think I'm just going to tell everybody I'm gay and see where that goes.
Well, now wait, maybe you should. You're a wrestler, right? Aren't you a wrestler? Isn't that your sport?
Yeah, I was 10 years of wrestling, 7 years of football, and I was a 3-time gold medalist and 2-time silver medalist.
Well, maybe you should tell your prospective employers that your wrestling medals were on the women's mat. I mean, you know, you competed, you were the Leah Thomas of wrestling. No one knows that, right? I mean, you'd be a shoe-in then, right?
I'm too afraid of Virginia Cruda coming after me to do that, but that's a good thought.
In case you didn't hear us earlier, Virginia Cruda heard our interview with Paula Scanlon. We talked with her from the Independent Women's Forum, and she was on the University of Pennsylvania team, swim team, that Will Thomas, who became Leah Thomas, walked into the dressing room, exposed his junk, and started getting dressed and showering with the girls. And they were basically told that there was something wrong with them. They were gaslit, the ladies on that team, when they objected to that. They were gaslit by the administration there and told them that they could get psychological counseling. That's where we've come to in these United States of America. So, you know, and then we talked to Virginia, who said she'd heard that, and she was on the way to her 10-year-old daughter's competition. And, you know, she sounded like dead serious, Jerome. I think if a male showed up in her daughter's dressing room, it would not be pretty. I mean, it would just not be pretty. You better get out the bleach because there's going to be a lot of bloodshed, I'm afraid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, on the one hand, you know, the First Amendment protects everybody's right to free expression, free speech. And I personally don't have an issue with people expressing themselves in that manner, except for when it comes to forced language, when it comes to competing against people that you have a clear advantage over. And there's a saying that I heard from some of my trans friends that they don't like drag queens because they look at them like they're clowns, like they're making fun of trans people. Mm-hmm. But how do you think women feel when you see a man dressed up like a woman like that saying, I deserve the same Title IX protections, that I deserve to be validated with my experience, despite the fact that like men don't have to go through things that women have to go through, you know, and vice versa. There are certain things that men deal with that women don't have to deal with either. So I believe firmly in our amendments. I believe in free speech. But when it comes to changing in locker rooms and having these girls be, and some of these girls were victims themselves in the hearing that was had on the gender affirming care last year, they were talking about there were girls that had been survivors of sexual abuse that were then being forced to change next to a man. Like, that cannot be good psychologically.
No.
So I'm just, it's a complicated issue, but at the end of the day, like, we need to do something about this.
Mm. Yeah. And you know, I guess I feel sorry for people who feel as though they're in the wrong body. I think they were put in a body by the Lord, by the God of the universe. And, you know, they need to probably adjust with that. I think a lot of men would have to rein in their sowing their wild oats, which is a biological imperative of male mammalian species, right? Because of the biology of males. And you know, males have to rein in some of their primal instincts in the name of monogamy, marriage, whatever, because of respect for those previously universally recognized guidelines. And so that's okay. But if you want to do that on your own dime and you're in the military, that's fine. But I really resent the fact that people that have that proclivity are asking me with my hard-earned money to pay for that, you know, crazy kind of activity, in my opinion, you know. But that's the problem I have when it comes to adults making that decision. You can make that decision, but you can pay for it. You can find some friends to pay for it, your family, whatever. Don't ask me to pay for it, right?
Exactly.
And I think I think we need to make that distinction. And certainly don't try to influence my very vulnerable and confused, which is by default the mindset of probably 99% of adolescents. At some one stage or another, all young people, as they transition from the pre-pubertal to pubertal and post-pubertal, those years between the teen years are, they're tumultuous psychologically, and kids are really going through a lot of questioning and self-inspection and trying to figure out what it's all about. And I think it's just taking advantage of those folks for people to be so overtly not only endorsing, but but actually pushing them in that direction of this behavior that ultimately does not turn out well for the vast majority of them. The studies are now showing that.
Yeah. And I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, even if you watch WWE or WWF, as it used to be called, you know, they'll have a disclaimer, do not try this at home. You know why? Because young people are impressionable and they'll see something that catches, you know, their interest or their fixation, and then they want to replicate that. Same reason why we don't let kids into R-rated movies without parents, because a lot of them will begin to glamorize that. So the celebration of this, and again, I truly feel for anybody that does not feel comfortable, and again, there's that 988 number if you're dealing with anything and you need to talk to somebody about it. But the fact that this is going on at such a young age where they are impressionable, there's no other way to look at it, in my opinion, than you're trying to encourage this. You're trying to put this idea in these kids' heads before they have the cognitive abilities to really determine for themselves. I'm not doubting that there aren't people out there that are authentically feel that way and they do feel better doing the things that, you know, trans people do. But the rise in it at such a steady and quick pace over the past few years since it's been implemented, that just raises a lot of suspicions for me.
Well, that's right. There's no way that you can say that that's biological, right? I mean, it's got to be a social contagion. I mean, that there's no other way to analyze that, right? That's not just recognizing a previously undiagnosed condition. This is clearly a social contagion. No doubt about it. Well, hey, listen, I think that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Tobler Show. Great stuff, Jerome. Great input from y'all on the various video feeds. If you weren't able to catch all the show, hope you'll do that on the podcast. It'll be up later today. And please invite your friends and family to enjoy us here on, or to join us and enjoy us every Saturday from 6 to 9 on Newstalk STL 101.9941. I'm going to say it again. I say it every week. Remember those values: faith, family, freedom. That's what got us here. That's what will restore us to the greatest nation this planet has ever seen. See you next time.